19-1008, Nathan M. versus Harrison School District. Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The 2016 IEP at issue in this case is not reasonably calculated to provide Nathan a free, appropriate public education under the substantive standard that was established by the United States Supreme Court in Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District. And neither the district court in this case nor the administrative law judge properly found that it did. The legal standard, as set out by the Supreme Court, is whether the IEP, the individualized educational program for the child, that is offered by the school district is, quote, reasonably calculated to enable the child to make progress appropriate in light of the child's circumstances. Finally, after 35 years of confusion and conflict in the courts, the Supreme Court finally decided this case and established a single standard to determine what constitutes a free, appropriate public education for a child with a disability.
Before you get into the merits, I want to stop you and talk about mootness. We're talking about the 2016 plan, education plan, for this student, and it's no longer in place, correct?
Correct.
So why would this have any consequences in the real world if we were to decide this case?
Because there is a fundamental dispute, an intractable dispute, amongst the parties that will never go away until this court decides that issue once and for all. This is a substantive challenge to the appropriateness of the free appropriate public or of the IEP, which includes the placement and program for this child. The parents believe, or the parents' position, along with their experts, is that this child needs a specialized placement like Alpine, which the school district many years ago decided this is what this child needs. He could not obtain an appropriate education anywhere else within the district other than at Alpine, and that Alpine provides a specific ABA-BCBA-based program. School district, on the other hand, believes that they can provide Nathan a FAPE in a completely different placement, a completely different program. And so we're at two.
Why wouldn't those arguments be at play for the 2019 IEP?
They would be.
Okay, so why do we care about what they did in 2016?
Then? Because that issue has not gone away. It's the same as in Andrew F., except
I know, but they haven't. I know it hasn't gone away, but they haven't made a decision yet about whether they may find your arguments now meritorious in light of the student's progress or lack of progress under the expiring IEP.
Well, under the exception to the mootness doctrine, one is it's incapable of being decided within the time frame, and I think that in the Stephen R.F. case, it's clear that yes, and Honig versus Doe, the U.S. Supreme Court says yes. Clearly, this year is too short of a time frame.
I get you on that, but it seems to me that the school district still could decide to send him back to Alpine based on current circumstances, right?
Theoretically,
I mean, if they've made a categorical or irreversible decision that he's never going to Alpine, then I think you're probably got a good argument. But do they still have the discretion to change their previous position and send him to Alpine?
Sure, they always do. I mean, and that could be tomorrow, that could be next week, that could be in 6 months, in a year. And I think that's what Honig versus Doe and all of these cases go to when you're talking about a substantive FAPE issue such that it's at the heart of this case, and that was at the heart of Andrew F., and that's the heart of 90% of all cases is this, you know, did the school district provide a free, appropriate public education?
Well, the differences in Honing is that the expulsion policy there was what they disagreed about. And whether it was the prior education plan or the next education plan or the plan after that, the district was taking the position that they could expel students for unruly behavior, and that's what the disagreement on. I think what Judge Dimkovich is saying is we've got a student here who the reason you evaluate him every year is because his progress may change and his needs may change, and the district is going to each year assess where he should be and what services he has. So looking at a 2016 plan doesn't really do us any good because it's not in effect anymore.
A couple points on that. I mean, it does because the issue is still live. The case and controversy over what is an appropriate education for this child has not been resolved. And there's no evidence in the record anyway that anything has changed since 2016. There's no additional evidence that's been proffered by the school district that says, hey, wait a second, court, this now is moot. The parents are on the same page with regard to the educational placement and program for this child. And I think an instructive case that's cited in our supplemental brief is this Daniel R.R. versus State Board of Education. And that case is basically the flip side of the same coin as this case is. There, the parent, and the Daniel R.R. case is very representative of a number of these special education disputes in that the parents there say, my child is in kindergarten in the public school. He's doing great. He's getting a free appropriate public education. And the school district says, no, we want to change his placement to, say, a self-contained classroom, a separate classroom with children with disabilities. And the parents say, wait a second, he's not being harmed. He's getting an appropriate education now. Keep him here. And so the dispute is theirs between this mainstreaming argument versus removal. And Daniel R.R., tackled that mootness issue straight on to say, we don't even care if the parents are no longer in the school district. This issue that is at the heart of this case is a substantive violation of the IDEA that doesn't go away.
Would you agree under this summer's mootness case that all your procedural claims would in fact be moot?
I think that the procedural claim, if there are only procedural claims, I think that just like in Stephen R.F., I think that they could say, I could say that there's an argument regarding mootness, but the central issue in this case is not procedural, it's substantive.
Okay. And the substantive claims here are what?
Substantive claims here is whether the IEP, the 2016 IEP, as drafted by the school district, is reasonably calculated to provide Nathan, an appropriate education.
Okay, and why wouldn't that substantive claim be superseded by, or why wouldn't that expire with the expiration of the 2016 plan?
Well, the 2016 plan or the 2017.
Let me broaden my question. You know what concerns should we have that the school district is going to commit the same sin for the next plan?
Because there's no evidence that it hasn't, right? If I'll put it this way, that if the court finds in this case that a substantive violation of the IDEA, such as this, that this IEP does not provide Nathan an appropriate education, both a placement and program, if the court finds that that issue is moot, then there is virtually no legal recourse, no judicial recourse for a child, because the court would always say, well, it's always going to be replaced by an IEP, and an IEP can be replaced next week.
No, I understand the catch-22 aspect of it, but what's the ongoing violation by Harrison? Ongoing violation of the IDEA?
Right. They have not offered to the parent an IEP, an individualized educational program, that's reasonably calculated to provide Nathan an appropriate education.
Okay, if we agree with that, what's the rent? What do we order them to do?
Well, you order them to
create a new IEP that's consistent with the law, right?
Well, that raises an interesting point in that this court, its standard of review is set by the IDEA, and this court's standard of review is identical to the district court standard of review, which is similar to, it's not similar to the ALJ, but it is identical to the district court, and that was decided in Garcia, but I think the Tenth Circuit has acknowledged that our standard of review here is similar to the district court, and the district court is required to, after...
Before you go there, answer my question on what we would order the school district to do if we ruled in your favor on this?
So we're asking you to rule in our favor and saying that according to the administrative record and the additional evidence that the district court admitted into this case but never considered, to say, as it stands right now, Nathan requires this placement and program, which it chose and Nathan's been at for the last 6 years, that is required at this time to provide Nathan an appropriate education in the least restrictive environment. So we're asking...
To send him to Alpine.
Alpine, I'm sorry.
But wouldn't the remedy be for us... Your substantive claim is that the school district failed to consider present performance levels and then develop an appropriate IEP.
Right.
And wouldn't the remedy be to send this back and tell the school district to do that?
Well,
because I don't think we can. I don't think we can tell them to send the child to Alpine, can we? Absent showing under the 2019 IEP that's the best available method for a FAPE.
Well, so the remedy.
Help me on the mootness. I'm just trying to overcome what we can do to help the child here.
Well, I mean, the answer to that is that, I mean, you're sitting technically, pursuant to the standard review, you're sitting in the same shoes as the district court. Mm-hmm. And the district court in this situation, what we're asking the district court to do is to take a look at the record, take a look at the additional evidence, and say, we're here to decide under the IDEA, under the standard provided by the court in NRF, what is an appropriate education for this child, right? And so that is what was the challenge was at the district court, and that's what the challenge is here today, is to say the district court got it wrong. It didn't even look at the evidence, really. It didn't base its decision on a preponderance of the evidence. We can either remand that to the district court and say, you know, apply the proper standard of review and apply the NRF standard and come up with the right decision, or this court can make that decision itself to say, all right, we need to apply. We're charged with looking at the administrative record, looking at the additional evidence, applying the standards set forth in NRF, and deciding, is this IEP, is it reasonably calculated to provide a FAPE?
Well, and if we did what you're telling us to do, and we said, yep, that 2016 plan's no good.
Right.
Again, what is the remedy? I mean, under the stay put rule, the child stayed where the parents wanted him, and that plan's no longer in effect. There's nothing.
It is in effect. Well, I mean, they
the
always.
The 2019 plan's in effect now, right?
Well, the 2019 plan is based upon what this court has decided to be a free, appropriate public education for the child. There is no stay put anymore. After the court decides, that is what the court decides. This is not a FAPE. I think everybody agrees that Alpine provides an appropriate education. He's made outstanding progress there. So that's not in dispute. The dispute is whether the school district's plan, you know, which is Otera Elementary School with no ABA, no BCBA,
but he's not in elementary school anymore.
Well, middle school.
Correct. And his 2019 plan provides for ABA, right?
No.
If you
have a 2019 plan, I'd like to see it, because the 2019, the 2017 plan, the 2018 plan, 2019 plan is nowhere in the four corners of the administrative record or the additional evidence that is before me and is before the court. The school district never sought to admit additional evidence to say, wait a second, we do have ABA or we do have BCBA. Things have changed. Here's the new IEP court to consider. That's never been done. And again, I know my time is running out, and we spent.
When is the 2019? Is there a 2019 plan in effect?
I don't know if there even is one. I know that there. I attended a couple.
When should it? I mean, the other one expires at the end of the school year, or does it?
Right. So if you take, you know, December.
Just tell me what happened procedurally in this.
So if you take December 2016, which is the IEP at issue in this case, it is legally required to be reviewed every year, right? But you can review an IEP all the time. So it's a very dynamic process. So you can't say, I mean, it's like saying, well, we have an IEP today and we have an IEP in 2 weeks. It would always
by
be
by its
mute.
Term, does it expire on a particular
date? The 2016? It hasn't expired so much as it's been replaced by something else. But again, I didn't leave enough time for rebuttal, but I'll give
you a little bit of rebuttal.
Okay. But I think it would be a very dangerous precedent, let me say that if in a substantive violation case like this, that the court would determine that this case is moot, because then that basically eradicates not only for parents to challenge an IEP, but school districts too. And that's why the school district and Stephen RF aggressively said our appeal is not moot. And that was on a single procedural issue that was checked off. That was determined. All right, that procedural issue is done. Here, it's nowhere close to that. We're dealing again with a decision that's of critical importance to a child. And if the court says in its decision in this case to say, well, every IEP is replaced or it expires, so there's no jurisdiction for us to decide that issue, that takes care of 90% of IDEA disputes.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Let's hear from the school district.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is John Stanek, and I'm with Anderson, Dude, and LaBelle, and we represent Harrison School District 2. Seated beside me is Mr. Kelly Dude from Anderson, Dude, and LaBelle, and immediately behind us is Ms. Amy Lloyd, the Special Education Director for Harrison School District. If I may begin by answering a couple of questions that I heard left unanswered. Currently, the IEP that's in place for Nathan is an IEP that was written in 2018. The 2019 IEP has been initiated through a reevaluation. The draft IEP has been sent to the parents. Mr. Robinson attended those IEP meetings in 2018, and the active IEP has been continued given the review process. Each year since 2016, the district has reviewed the IEP pursuant to IDEA and reevaluated the student.
You think this case is moot then?
Your Honor, if this case is not moot, it is due to the substantive issue of free appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment.
And don't they have a couple of substantive claims here?
Pardon me?
Aren't there some substantive claims still?
Yes, Your Honor. The substantive claims would be the free appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. Unlike Fernandez, this case involves a placement along two different placements along the least restrictive environment continuum. And that is Alpine is an off-campus private facility limited to only applied behavioral analysis, and this Otero is a neighborhood elementary school with a center-based program.
Well, is that argument good enough to take us outside the realm of Stephen RF?
Well, it
and
is.
Get to the merits?
I would say that would be an opportunity for this court to distinguish Fernandez from this case, Your Honor, yes.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, Your Honor, that in Fernandez, the dispute was some technical procedural questions on two different settings that were not different on the least restrictive environment continuum. And in this case, there is. And under both Nebo and Murray, the least restrictive environment is a substantive issue in IDEA.
But how does it come into play here that it's going to necessarily be involved in all the future plans, education plans?
Sure, Your Honor. As you see in the record, the struggle with Nathan is not simply behavioral. His behavioral issues are fairly contained and compliant. Only two behaviors came forward in the reevaluation from 2016, and also two behaviors from the independent evaluation came forward. The real struggle for him is in accessing the curriculum and accessing reading, writing, and mathematics specifically, as well as socialization skills taught by appropriately licensed teachers who know how to teach. ABA has its limits. It is not effective. It is wanting in teaching students how to read, write, and conduct mathematics. And that is his struggle. And that is what the IEP contains from 2016, as well as his most recent IEP recommends reading, writing, and mathematics instruction by a licensed professional teacher who knows how to teach those subject matters. He is eager, he's an eager learner. He seeks to learn. And that's exactly what the IEP is conducted to provide him. And as the review goes forward, there is no predetermination. We can't predict what the next IEP will do. However, we do know that Alpine is showing wanting instruction in mathematics and reading and writing, and does not have licensed teachers who are familiar with teaching reading, writing, and mathematics, and other subject matters for that matter, for science and social studies and such. If I may continue, in his brief, opposing counsel somehow blames either Judge Mage or the district court for not having sufficient evidence to weigh in his favor. However, the evidence that's presented is primarily evidence by the opposing counsel, is primarily evidence of old expired state complaints or state complaints that have been superseded by the ALJ, or independent educational evaluations that were not available to the IEP team at the time of the construction of the 2016 IEP. As the evidence in the merits of this case, if I may proceed to that, the evidence of the record shows that the parent participated extensively in the IEP discussions. Unfortunately, some of this issue at least is manufactured by the parent, and the plaintiff's counsel does not deny that. At least 40 hours of time were spent between the parent and the district in answering questions, carefully constructing the IEP over the course of 5 IEP meetings and 10 months of time. The independent facilitator of the IEP meeting rated the opportunity for the parent to participate in this IEP process as a 10 on a scale of 10. The Alpine attendees. The Alpine attendees attended 3 of the 5 IEP meetings. The two that they didn't attend, one was an eligibility-only meeting, the other they were invited to and chose not to attend for whatever reason. But the 3 IEP meetings that they did attend were the IEP meetings that spent exclusively on time on the development and construction of the IEP. The IEP goals and objectives were carefully constructed over the course of those hours. And they also include, as opposed to the representation given you earlier, they include principles of applied behavioral analysis embedded within the IEP as well as within the BIP, the Behavior Intervention Plan. And the goals and objectives were designed to meet not only his behavioral needs, but also his needs in reference to academics and access to the general education curriculum and access to his peers. The IEP also contains services that are appropriate for those needs. The services that it contains are not only people who are familiar with applied behavioral analysis in reference to his behavior, but also services that are needed for this student in terms of his academics and access to the general education curriculum, as well as access to his expanded standards.
What's your response to Nathan's argument that the ALJ applied the wrong legal standard?
Your Honor, he applied the correct legal standard. Andrew F. is how he referenced all of the Andrew F. is how he referenced all of the procedures that are still valid under Rowley, as well as the construction of the IEP, the development of the IEP, and the careful consideration of the parents' involvement and so on. In my briefing, and in the amici brief, we discuss the formulation that the Supreme Court used in Andrew F. on the new standard, and that the words and verbiage of the new standard came from the construction in the section of the IEP. The IEP goals and objectives were carefully constructed to meet Nathan's needs, both behaviorally as well as instructionally. And that's the emphasis of the new standard. The new standard is that it is properly calibrated according to both the student's needs as well as based within the context of the statute. Also, in Andrew F. does not change the requirement that the FAPE be provided in the least restrictive environment. As both, again, Nebo and Murray emphasize, Andrew F. did not change that calculation. Andrew F. looked at the second prong of the Rowley standard and corrected the disputes that were happening among the circuits, and the circuits were utilizing different adjectives and different phrases that seemed to be pointing in the same direction, but there was conflict among them. To resolve that, they washed the table clean, so to speak, of those adjectives and kept their eyes, as guided by Rowley, on terminology that is relevant to the child's needs and derived from the statute. I am complete, Your Honor.
Before you sit down, just on the mootness issue.
Yes.
Is your answer yes, it is moot, or no, because there are substantive issues alive?
I recognize that there, let me walk through my reasoning on this, if I may. There are many similarities.
Yes or no, comma. Well, okay. Oral advocacy tip, right?
I believe that the substantive issue maintains a viable that gets past mootness. I believe that a substantive issue such as FAPE in the least restrictive environment is maintains it. The procedural issues are appropriately remedied and are appropriately handled through both the IEE, in this case, the independent educational evaluation, but also the IEP reviews that happen and the simple corrections. The unique aspect between this case and Fernandez is that this case deals with FAPE in the least restrictive environment. And in Fernandez, it was purely a FAPE issue on a technical terminology that seemed to be procedural. Great.
Thank you, counsel. I appreciate your candor. Give Mr. Robinson 45 seconds. Were you, I'm sorry, you have more time. Were you done?
Yes, I am done. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to say, going back to your question regarding the standard used by the administrative law judge in this case, and then the standard used by the district court as well, is to, sort of impress upon the court that the ALJs are contracted by the Colorado Department of Education basically to make findings of fact and decisions of law for them, and that vast majority of the time they're on the front lines, that the parents are unrepresented by counsel, as in this case they were. And they are invariably, not invariably, 100% of the time represented by experienced counsel who all they do is special education work. And so it's critical that there's no confusion as to the standard of the application of the proper standard for determining a FAPE. And here when you have an administrative law judge who's not alone with other administrative law judges who is still using this basic floor of opportunity consisting of some educational benefit and making passing reference to other cases, that's dangerous. It shows a clear lack of sort of understanding of what they are supposed to do. And this is, in this case here, is the first decision on all fours, if the court reaches the merits of this, as to the application of this Andrew S. standard in the Tenth Circuit, which will be closely watched. And I think that the district courts clearly, and especially the ALJs, most of these cases never ever get this far, but the ALJs need a concrete decision. Thought they'd have one from the Supreme Court, but from the Tenth Circuit to say, you know, this is how you decide these cases. This is the standard.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Appreciate the arguments. Your time's expired.
Thanks.
Counsel are excused and the case shall be submitted. Thank you.